Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. I am super excited for today's episode. I'm always excited, but this guest is going to be fun. So I have Rob Bayer from Anomaly Squared. He, as the president of Anomaly Squared, which is a BPO outsourced business partner call center operation, he brings a long track record of successfully leading US-based call centers, contact centers. And what's going to be fun about this is that it's mostly been from the back end, the operation side, the analytics, the technology, the infrastructure, that part of the call center. So not so much sales, running the sales teams, but from the operation side, which if you want to have a successful call center operation, successful sales operation, key is the operation part, which is what makes this so fun. So we are going to chat a lot about systems, processes, technology, where people win, where people struggle with. So Rob, thank you for coming on the show. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
And anybody who's been listening to shows, I'm going to say something I've said several times now as I'm recording shows with guests, is what makes this equally fun. We're recording this late October. We literally just were at a conference last week, LeadsCon in Vegas, and met in person for the first time, even though we were both at the same conference in March, which was a very small conference by conference terms, and we still didn't cross paths then. But we were able to meet. So what's fun is I'm really on this mode, which is such a blast for me, of virtual, online, remote relationships, phone calls, Zoom calls, meeting in person, turning that into an in-person thing. So this is even more fun because now that I've met you in person, I know we're going to have a blast.
Yeah, definitely. I look forward to it.
So like I said, you've been mostly on the operation side. You come at this from the operation systems technology piece and have a ton of experience in different campaign types. Let's start with just a little background of what you're doing now and what Anomaly Squared looks like from a call center support standpoint. And then we can dive into, you know, the challenges that especially the sales-based campaigns or organizations have.
Yeah, definitely. So Anomaly Squared was basically formed with the idea of how can we take the workload off of loan officers or loan advisors within the mortgage industry. And so the owner of our company had ran his own mortgage institution for quite some time. And the challenge every day was, I have these leads, but no one is calling on them. Or if they are calling on them, they're not making a large enough effort each day, once, twice, three times, whatever that looks like, to reach out to customers and really, really do their best to contact somebody. So we got the idea, he got the idea of, what if I have these agents who can do the pre-qualification, follow the steps in the process of really retaining a lot of information, really, really getting a verbal commitment that I have the time today to close, right? And then you once you've captured all that information, you transfer them to a loan advisor. We've applied that same philosophy to the lead gen space and taking those leads, processing qualifications, and then transferring them over to insurance buyers. Different organizations are ready and they love warm transfers, right? Nobody wants to make cold calls all day. So we spend a large portion of our time, or we have spent a large portion of our time, just warming up leads and then transferring to those who would be interested in closing. And so that's really our large business model. We also do work in the patient recruitment space, where we've partnered with a lot of pharmaceutical companies and physicians' offices who want to process, recruit patients for clinical trials. A large one we did in December, we made about 50,000 outbound calls and received about 100,000 inbound calls for people looking to become part of the COVID vaccine study. So it's really interesting world. You know, my background, like you were saying, Jason, is operations. I've been in deep sales. You know, I started in 1996. And one of the first campaigns I worked on was selling long distance over the phone. And so, you know, it's interesting how it sort of morphed or changed over the last 25 years. But in a nutshell, that's what Anomaly Squared is. We process, we do lead qualification and warm transfers for those looking to not necessarily do the cold calling on their own.
All right. So many questions from that. So many things that are popping in my mind, some of which you're completely unprepared for because we didn't chat about these in advance. Because this is what I'm always curious about. What have you seen as some big changes or differences, shifts from 1996, calling people about their phone service, various campaigns you've done, to now, in two buckets? One is what I'm always curious about is the internal operations, salespeople and whatnot internally, and then also the consumer, how the consumer's changed, what they want, what they don't like, what they don't want, what they like, what they don't like.
I think the first thing is I think consumers are more experienced and they're ready for the phone calls, where, you know, in 95 and 96, telemarketing had just sort of exploded as a means of communication or as a means of, you know, gaining revenue or a business model, right? I mean, it was always there on a small scale, but it was pick up the phone, right? And I think in the early 90s is when they started using the dialer systems. So there's a lot of changes now in that one, customers are prepared. So that means our agents have to be better prepared, right? And so when you call somebody now, they've received so many calls, they almost know what you're going to say before you say it. So the difficulty is you want your agents to be able to stand out, right? And so what doesn't change or what hasn't changed in the world of telesales or as a call center is the most important piece to success in a call center is not product. I believe it's how the agent sounds, right? If they are engaged, if they're focused, if they're ready, if they sound like they want to be on the phones, your customers are going to buy it, right? And so that has not changed. It's just technology has changed. Like I said before, is pick up the dialer and hit the buttons and you call somebody. You had a, you know, a Rolodex of phone numbers or white pages, whatever that might look like. And now it's, you know, cloud-based systems like a Five9, which is, you know, a company we use, or Convoso, which, you know, we use their platform as well. And so technology has just improved. But like I said, I think the biggest change is your customers are ready. And when you call them, they are not surprised.
It's so interesting to think about that, where you think of that change. And I also relate that to, remember being a kid and somebody would knock on the door and you'd be excited, right? Yeah. Like, who is this? It must be someone from the neighborhood, right? Because, you know, maybe they'd call, but they'd stop by and maybe they've got something for you or they want to hang out or, you know, whatnot. And then, you know, more and more, depending on where you lived, people are knocking on doors, selling door to door. And then you no longer want to answer the door. When you get a knock on the door, it's like, okay, if they didn't call in advance, it must not be good, right? So you're prepared, like you're saying, on the defense. And so I could see that with the phone calls too, which when the phone rang, especially a while ago without caller ID, it was exciting. Whoever was calling, it was either exciting or somebody needed something or there was a problem, but it was literally somebody you wanted to talk to versus now.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I think before, I mean, everybody used to run to the phone to answer. Now everybody runs away from the phone.
Runs to the phone to check the caller ID. And if it's not somebody they not just know, but actually want to talk to, then they're not answering it. And and I think you're right. When I haven't thought about that part, which is, okay, so if they do answer, then they're ready for it. Either they filled out a form and they're expecting a call, or they're willing to take a call and they're ready for it because they're kind of defensive mode or whatever it is. And how your agents, your salespeople, anybody making those dials needs to be prepared. They need to be ready and be good at what they do.
That's exactly right.
And so based on your experience, though, how often does that actually happen? I mean, not just internally with you all, because obviously you understand that principle, you're going to, you know, have your reps and agents be a certain way. But what are you seeing or think happens more so in the industry with that intersection?
And you're meaning so customers being ready and what kind of challenge that may present.
Yeah. And then agents and how prepared agents are for that, or what agents or salespeople or reps think their job is and what they're going into it with.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of companies now, I mean, when I started off, the training was an hour. And so, you know, here you go, here's the materials, here's your list, go after it, right? And so now, though, I think knowing what that end result might be, knowing that customers are more prepared, I think what you're seeing in the call center industry is the depth of training is improving. It's fast, right? We've got, you know, there's people like you, Jason, who specialize in teaching people how to sell over the phones, right? And so I think over time, what happens is it's created opportunities and created sort of systems where you're spending more time pre-phone understanding products, but not just the product, but also how do you sell over the phone? You know, customers, the old adage of they can't see you, so they base everything on how you sound, right? And so you spend a lot more time teaching people coming on board of, you know, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And how do you do that? How do you use keyword emphasis? And so a lot of the training now is you're spending weeks, sometimes 2 or 3 weeks with an agent before they ever make one on phone, even if there's not a lot of product knowledge. And so I think, again, I think the big change now is just over the last 20 years, we know what's going to happen in the operation side of things. We know what to expect from customers. And so we need to be more prepared. We need to prepare our agents. And a lot of that is just face-to-face training.
So when you, in the beginning, you mentioned doing the mortgage lead kind of outreach qualification, and then, you know, transferring that person, then also doing other lead gen industries activities. You mentioned insurance. I'm curious because you've been obviously in organizations on the sales side, you've been a salesperson, moved your way up, you know, on the operation side. Any idea why that's just always a thing where salespeople don't follow up with their leads enough, or, you know, don't make that outreach, or organizations don't just have salespeople that are following up enough? I mean, technically it would put you out of business, or you wouldn't have that side of the business for you, but you think that's always a thing?
I think the workforce is changing. I think the idea of warm transfers, the idea of, you know, if I'm a loan officer and I can spend my day dialing through people who I may not even get them on the phones, or if I can be there and have somebody else do the legwork, right? And so filter through the nose. And when you do finally get somebody on the phone, capture as much of the pertinent information as you can get and transfer. I think the agents just know that's an option. And I think it's, you know, would you rather spend your time, you know, if you're a loan advisor, would you rather spend your time cold calling or talking to people who are ready to close? And I think there's just a difference in mindset now. And I think that option is out there and people know of it. And I also think saturation, I think numbers create that. And what I mean is I believe that at one point there were more leads than there were people who could dial those leads or work those leads, if that makes any sense. And so really what I think has happened is, you know, there's more people who need the services, and these more lending institutions don't have enough employees on their side to actually make the necessary calls to get them on the phone. And so what ends up happening is these lending institutions reach out to somebody like us, like a BPO, right? And say, hey, we don't have enough agents to process these. Can you help us? And so we'll take that initial part of the call. And so it does a couple things. One, it reduces their turnover, right? So the loan advisors are sticking around because they're not doing the cold calling piece. One, it actually helps save those organizations money because they're not spending and hiring extra resources internally to make those phone calls. You add in the fact that your turnover is going to be higher, which means your training costs or higher. So why not just use somebody like us who can actually facilitate those? And I think, again, as I was saying earlier, where customers are getting smarter, I think our employees are getting smarter. And to be frank, I think it's just there's a natural sort of and some of the people who are in the industry to, hey, I got two choices. I can take a call that's warm, that's hot, and closer, or I can spend my entire day calling. And I think it's just natural. I think there's a natural sort of evolution to the thought process of an agent.
So when I usually ask that question, and then I'm thinking about my experiences in my head of why companies don't do that, it's interesting because I have usually a different answer or observation in the world. I appreciate the fact that you're putting it more in the, it makes more business sense to outsource a process and pay somebody a certain amount so that somebody instead, the loan officer, the salesperson, can then do higher value activities.
Correct.
And that makes sense, right? So if there's something that I could do that someone else can do for certain dollar hourly rate, that's much lower, then it only makes sense to have someone do it. And I should do it, right? Like I'm literally going backwards if I don't. And I think that's great. I think what's interesting for me though, is what I usually see, that's kind of the theory behind it for the companies or the salesperson sitting in that seat. The other side that I see though, is that once they get a warm lead, they realize that's way easier than making any outbound calls. So even once you start that as an option, then why would I ever call anyone else back? I've literally seen salespeople with their feet up on their desk, just waiting for that warm transfer or warm inbound call, instead of doing any effort on their pipeline, because it's just easier hoping that the next one will sometimes just close itself.
Yeah. And I often wonder, you know, I believe that's the mindset, right? And, you know, if you are sitting there and if you're on a cold lead and a warm transfer pops up, you miss it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think you're losing an opportunity for revenue. So it's kind of, you know, it's a great process, but I think we're sort of aiding in the philosophy of, hey, I'm just going to wait here.
There was a time where I was in between careers and I went back to sales and was working for a friend of mine. And he's like, hey, you just sell for me for a while. And so it was good. It was good experience. And I solved that problem with the outbound dials to my pipeline. And then what was a warm inbound call by having two headsets and two VoIP phone systems, one for inbound, one for outbound. And sometimes I was literally, you know, bouncing back and forth between two phone calls, one in each ear, like muting one person or the other. And handling that situation.
Well, Jason, you're an anomaly, right?
I know. that's one of the words I've been called for sure. Leave it at that. An anomaly is good. So when we're, and I think that's a great discussion to what you were talking about with, you know, doing that for the clients and where that value is. Obviously, that's the biggest thing. And when we're talking about sales, scalable call centers, a lot of that comes down to if you want to scale, you have to have your team doing the highest and best activities that you need them for, right? Not just what you hope or what you want, or maybe even what they're best at, but like, what do you need them for? And if your need for salespeople in particular is to have conversations with other people and help them make the right decision, then you want to remove all the other stuff that might get in the way of that, right? Maybe it's with technology, maybe it's with, you know, contacting the leads, qualifying, getting those set up so that it just shaves that time down to leave that person in the zone, right? Yeah. Not dealing with a whole bunch of other stuff. When it comes to sales call centers, or even your center that you're dealing with or making these dials, so it's a little bit different situation because you're not doing the sales for them. You're qualifying the leads. You're hunting through the lists and getting engaged with people. What are some of the biggest challenges that you're facing either from your side or you're seeing the sales call center clients that you're working with, what they're facing?
Well, I do think it's answer rates. I think that's probably the largest or biggest obstacle of any call center, right? How do you get people to answer the phone, right? And so there are definitely, I mean, there are solutions out there to help and aid in that from, the way, you know, Five9, for example, and the way you can rotate caller IDs. But I really believe that, and it's probably been the way, you know, for years is, you know, you, how many calls do you have to make before you get somebody to answer, right? And so that is, to me, is the primary sort of objective of any call center. And so I think technologically, you know, where we're starting to see sort of call center shift is an omni-channel solution. And so what I mean is, just dialing or power dialing isn't the only way you're going to get somebody to answer the phone, right? So you have to integrate, you know, texting. How do you integrate chat? You know, at what point do you email? And the whole goal behind using all four of those means of communication is to increase your contact rate. And so I think that's one big shift in technology over the last, few years, is we're starting to see that the different generations, right? Millennials, Gen X's, and things. Everybody communicates differently. Like, you call, my father, he's not going to, you have to call him, right? But I have a 26-year-old son, and he's not going to pick up the phone ever. The only way he's going to communicate is through text. And so, and you don't really know what is what. And so I think, you know, technology is shifting. A lot of these platforms are becoming omni-channel, which again means they're able to communicate in three or four different ways, to really, again, you're ultimately trying to say, hey, how can I increase my contact rates? If I've got, 100 leads, if I want to achieve success, I need to speak to 20 or 30 of them. But right now I'm only speaking to five. And so You integrating and using those different means of communication is critical to getting there.
From that, since you brought up omnichannel, which is great. So it's not just, I'm going to just hammer on this list and call everyone possible and just see who answers, right? Because you're going to miss a group that either the timing, the synchronicity of the fact that they are open to answering the phone, kind of like what we talked about earlier, right? At the same moment that you're dialing them, which means they're not busy, they're not distracted. They're looking at their phone and they want to actually talk to you, right? Yes. If we really step back and think about the probability of those two things matching up, it's ridiculous that phone sales ever actual works at scale, because it's like, okay, now you're just, it's a numbers game. So if we take even from that, and then we look at, the other things, the SMS, the chats, the emails, whatever that looks like, how do you structure that? Or what have you seen work well as far as best practices, or the challenges you've had with, do you have each of your people on all of those channels? Do you have separate teams that are masters of those channels? And then it's always leading to a phone call. Like, how do you tackle that? That they're really four different types of communication.
Yeah, it's a great question. And so, the first thing is there aren't very many platforms out there that are capable of doing all three, or if they are, they may not be as efficient, right? And so that's one thing to understand. The second thing I would highly recommend and that we do is test. We are always in test mode, right? And so working on a cadence, when do you do dial one? When do you do text one? When do you do dial two? And things of that nature. When do you do the email? At what point do you say, okay, I've exhausted all the attempts? And then how long would you let that lead rest before you do another attempt? And what's that attempt look like? Is it an SMS? Is it an email waiting for an inbound? Or do you do another phone call? And I think, my suggestion for anybody in the industry trying to, find the best way to improve your contacts, you just have to test, because every sort of lead is different, right? Every sales campaign is different. And there's not one cookie cutter way to approach it. And so you really got to individually look at each one and, spend enough time on it. Look at the data, look at the analytics, and then you make your decisions from there. And so I think, I will say this, we have five or six different campaigns, and we do not have the same dialing cadence or texting cadence on any of them. They are all different. From when do I text, to how long do I wait before I text, to how long do I wait before I call again? Every one of them is slightly different. It's taken a couple of years of sort of diving into those analytics to figure out what works.
Then how do you, from there, deal with or manage the people side within your center of who's going to be on what channel of what campaign, or how much they're doing, right? Because if they're on the phone all the time, should they be on chats? What happens if somebody responds to SMS? How do you balance that from a workforce side?
Yeah, it's a great question there as well. So I think utilization in any call center is important, right? You want your agents working. So the structure of Anomaly Squared is such that, you know, we can put individuals on multiple campaigns and we can see their workload in real time, right? And so that's part of it. The other part is there are some people who just aren't good at texting. There are some people who are, I mean, you know, or understanding how to text or, you know, the right communication. Some are better orally, some are better written. And so, again, I would not say we have a cookie cutter. We do it individually, but, you know, utilization to us is critical, right? So if I've got somebody that's, you know, only spending 40% of their time on a campaign, I may give them text capabilities, right, to kind of fill up that bucket. Or if somebody is really busy receiving inbound calls, right, say 70% of their time is they're busy, I'm not going to add the texting option to them because they're spending time with a customer. And so the systems that you're using can give you all that data and provide all that information right in front of you. And it's a constant change, right? Because we also know that call lead flow changes from hour to hour, right? Yeah. I may, you know, between 10 and noon, I may receive 2,000 calls or do 2,000 outbound calls, but from 12 to 5, it may drop significantly for different reasons, right? Years and years ago when I first started, you know, we used to schedule our agents to work every two nights every single week. And the reason is because your contact rates were better, right? But now it's not so much. Contact rates are actually best between 12 p.m. and 5 p.m. in the current time zone they're in. And so it's interesting shift over the last few years. But, you know, what the short answer to that is you just got to manage your systems, right? You got to know your systems. You got to watch utilization and determine what skill sets to give them, whether it's calling, texting, chatting, or emailing.
So you mentioned metrics, KPIs. You talked about utilization, obviously key things for a call center. Is there any other metrics, since you're an operations data guy, right, on the back end, kind of watching everything and then, you know, figuring out the right formula, is there any KPIs that have surprised you, let's say, not just pandemic year and a half, but let's say in the last couple of years, where there's a metric you're looking at and you're like, okay, this one is really actually pretty valuable, where maybe it was surprising to you?
Handle time. You know, and just making sure that our agents are efficiently using their conversations with customers, right? And so,
interesting.
How you balance, you know, in sales, there, you need to establish a rapport, right? And so, you can't just go in and out. It takes time to establish rapport. And so, but sometimes you can get too far away from the conversation that matters. And so watching handle time, especially if you're an inbound call center, is a critical piece. And that's something now over the last 3 years has really jumped out at me personally, coming from primarily an outbound sales environment to now where it's more customer service and we're handling more inbound calls.
And is there a target range that you're shooting for, or a minimum or a maximum, like an average at an agent level?
It depends on the customer. It really depends on the customer. You know, a lot of our calls probably last in or somewhere between 4 to 8 minutes with an average of 6. And so, you know, as you're looking, if you see somebody at 9 or 10 minutes, it's an alert, right? Agents or managers begin listening to those phone calls just to make sure that there's nothing going awry or, you know, south really quickly, because that tends to be what happens, right, when you're starting to get into those longer conversations.
Yeah, I ask because that's always an interesting balance from a management perspective and in how much of a line is drawn there, how much the agents feel worried about going over a handle time or keeping it in a certain range. I remember one of the first times I met someone who ran a call center, she was in charge of an AT&T call center, and they had a line in the sand. And literally the challenge she faced was the senior reps on the team were used to that line and literally would be hanging up calls.
They're just done.
At a certain time. Yeah,
that's right.
Just ditching calls. And then if it was a short call, they would stretch it out or try to stay on the phone to keep it in that range instead
that's
of
right.
solving it quickly. Because
it's interesting how
negative.
Agents. Yeah, it's interesting how agents think. Right. And so, you know, I believe with handle time, you can't put a line in the sand. I think not with the agent, at least. Right. I think you can put a line in the sand and creating alerts for your management team. Right. Because then they can begin to dive in when that call hits the threshold, right? And so if they are, if calls reach, let's say, again, we're looking for 6 minutes, calls reach 7 or 8 minutes, there's an alert that comes to the manager. The manager can immediately begin monitoring. And the great thing about the systems now is they can chat with the man, with the agent, while the agent's on the phone. And so, you know, managers now are able to coach them through potentially negative situations or even barge in and take over the call. And so really what I find with handle time is it's more important for your managers to know that number than necessarily the agents.
Got it. I love it. So let's shift a little bit and talk about the elephant in the 2021 room here, which is recruiting and retention. Obviously you're providing a service on behalf of other people. So you're recruiting, hiring internally, anybody who's done outbound or any kind of lead generation, lead qualification. I mean, sales is hard to recruit for as a skill. It was what you're dealing with, which could lead to a lot of turnover because it's, you know, lots of dials. It's high paced, fast paced. What are you seeing as ways to approach that and succeed, and or where are you still trying to figure it out in this current climate? You know, here's the, at the end of 2021.
Yeah. So, you know, we was talking about, I love data, right? I love analytics and I love testing. And so, you know, recruiting is a challenge for all of us. And I think really what's happening is everybody's competing for the same person now, right? Used to, your call centers were brick and mortar, right? And so you had a site in Greensboro, North Carolina, and all your employees came into work there. You're really only competing with maybe one or two other talent marketing companies in that town specifically. Well, now that the world is all virtual, everyone is competing for the same people everywhere. And so, you know, I've ran multiple tests. I've ran tests from, you know, do I increase my wage? Do right away? Do I bring somebody in at a certain wage? Then I set goals and say, okay, at 90 days, we're going to get you at this number, right? Done lots of tests from that standpoint. And interestingly, what I found is wage isn't the driving factor in hiring or retention, at least within our organization. What is a factor is how many recruiters I have. And so used to, I could have one recruiter and that one recruiter could get me 10 strong new hires every single week, right? I increased wages with that same recruiter, but I still only got 10 people with the same recruiter. I added two recruiters, kept the wage the same, and then all of a sudden I started getting more people in the door without increasing the wage. And so what I'm kind of giving a little bit of a trade secret in here, and as far as, you know, don't tell anybody. Adding recruiters has been the key, right? And so what has changed is prior to the pandemic within Greensboro, North Carolina, I would have to interview 100 people to get 10. Now I have to nationwide interview and try to recruit 1,000 people to get 10. And it didn't matter the wage. So how do you go from getting 100 interviews to 1,000? Increase your recruiting staff. And so that has been our biggest, at least fine during this pandemic.
Well, and I appreciate you sharing that with the listeners of the podcast. I think that's a great tip. I hadn't heard that one and that approach. And it's interesting because it mirrors kind of what happens when somebody, let's say on the sales side, is looking at higher cost lead options. Yeah. Right. It's like, what's the result? What's the return on investment? What's the cost if you don't invest in that thing? And what I hear you saying is that if I have two recruiters, I'm going to have twice the cost, twice the expense, or there's something that's going to be more expensive because now you have two people involved, whether they're on staff or they're commission or performance based. So it's going to cost something. And I can literally hear people listening to this or other call centers and sales leaders thinking, I can't do that. I can't afford that. That doesn't make sense. I'm not going to change. I'm not going to spend more on that. But you've got to look at what's the opportunity cost of a vacant seat every single moment of every day that you could be maximizing them, whether it's lead gen, outsource, inside sales, right? What's that opportunity cost? What's the cost of turnover when you lose somebody and you can't fill it in? And so you invest more up front. And what's that going to be? Obviously, from a data perspective, I'm sure you've done all that analysis. when you made that decision and had to get everyone's buy-in on board, and you probably looked at it and said, okay, it's going to cost us this to bring in one new person versus what it used to cost us at, you know, as an average, but here's what it's going to mean for us by not having a vacant seat or filling more demand from our clients, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're recruiting, what typically, you're sort of asking a question here to answer your question is, you know, when you're recruiting somebody, you're competing, you know, like I was saying before, you were competing only in Greensboro, and now you're competing nationwide. The wages have gone up, right? And so the expectations of pay, for varying reasons, right, has increased. So what we found, and so even though I'm saying I'm adding a recruiter, what I found was that it was actually more economical to add a recruiter than it was to increase the wages of all the people that we were trying to bring on board. And so actually it's cheaper. So it's less expensive because I could pay three recruiters a certain amount of money to get me 20 employees, or I could pay one recruiter to get 20 employees, but increase all 20 of those employees by 20% because the competition is paying that. So it's actually cheaper to do it the way that I've outlined.
And depending on the pay model for the recruiters and what that, if there's a performance base,
that's right.
Then, you know, you're paying a higher wage to those 20 people forever, right?
Yeah.
Or what you're paying the recruiters to get it. And then however long that is, you know, that performance side. So I love that approach. And obviously, again, there's two big keys and two big takeaways from this, plus everything that you've been talking about, really the fundamentals, you know, because of what I know about you, which is testing and data.
That's it. Yep. Yeah. Can't go wrong. Numbers don't lie, right?
Numbers don't lie. They're not subjective. They're very clear. How you interpret them can be subjective, but the numbers don't lie themselves and making decisions. And I think that is a big change for a lot of organizations where they're built around sales, salespeople doing what salespeople do. They want to try to grow and scale. And it goes from just hammering on on the phone and selling people to building systems that then run at scale.
Yes.
What would you say, you know, if we look back, maybe even over the last 2 years, what is the biggest success or successes that you've had in the organization?
With Anomaly Squared specifically?
Yeah.
I think it's diversification. The organization, Anomaly Squared, is a great company. We've been in the industry for 10 years. We specialized in the insurance vertical and mortgage vertical. Well, now we're getting outside of those and getting our hands into customer service. And again, I think just like you want to diversify your stocks, hedge your bets, things of that nature. You know, I came on board and quickly realized that if we're going to grow and become the company that, you know, is here for the next 20 to 30 years, we need to diversify, not in just a client portfolio, but in who we are doing work for. And I think what's really been interesting is we've been able to take an organization that, again, specialized in two verticals, and now we're in five or six different ones. And so it's opening up, you know, we've proven that we're not just a lead qualification, we can do sales. We're not just a lead qualification, we can be an outstanding customer service agency. And so really, it's not monetary, it's more of, you know, how we've been able to take the infrastructure that was here and build upon it.
And with the team, because I think this is important, because most everyone is facing this challenge at some level. Now you've got a team that's not just in North Carolina, they're potentially everywhere. And you've got a diversification of campaigns. So it's not even like you have remote teams and people working from home, but you're still focused on one vertical. So you know that so well, like it's so easy that you can handle that. So what are you focused on, or how do you ensure that you've got diversified campaigns, remote agents, in-office agents, this hybrid environment? Like, how do you win that game overall, or how are you tackling that?
Great team leaders, right? And so I think what's been really important for me personally is putting together a team that, you know, is all in with Anomaly, right? And so what's really been important over the last couple of years is we've added sales managers, we've added account managers. We now have a high level HR team. And so without your division leaders, right, head of finance, head of sales, head of employees, head of training, head of ops, you know, directors, whatever you want to call them, none of this would happen. And so the way it's happened is one, hiring really good people that I could rely on and doing everything I can to keep them around. Because that, you know, I think that's the other even challenge for high level executives now is your directors can work anywhere now, right? I mean, a person in Greensboro doesn't have to find a job in Greensboro. They can now work in California from Greensboro. And so, you know, how, you know, finding those team members, developing those team members, building a cohesive team that wants to stay together and win together has really been something that's important.
Got it. I think that's great. And obviously, the stronger you have in the leadership part of the org chart, management's team leads up to, you know, directors and so on, obviously, they're going to be there to support everyone.
That's right.
Just keep things going as a foundation.
Yep.
Because if that's weak, it's tough to expect the individual contributors, the agents, to be successful if they're kind of on their own in the office, let alone on their own island at home without good leadership.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think I've always sort of tried to take the model of when I'm building those team members that it's diversity and counsel, unity and command, right? And so I want my counsel to be diversified. But once we leave our office, right, or our meeting is over, we are unified and we are one. And so I think when, you know, we take that philosophy as a group, it really helps sort of keep us moving forward as a group.
I think it's a great place to end. For people who are tuning into this, they want to find out more about you, see what you're doing, kind of more of these thought processes, as well as what the company's doing. I know the big things are anomalysquared.com for the business. And then also you're very active on LinkedIn. So people look up Rob Bayer on LinkedIn, which is how we even connected and how we chat a lot. Anything else going on? Anything you have coming up? Anything that, you know, people listening to this should tune in for or go search out that you have available?
Not necessarily available. We, you know, we are looking to, like I said before, we're looking to diversify. We hope to, you know, begin generating our own leads for our call center partners. And so that's going to be a big sort of project over the next 1 to 2 years. So look out for that. We'll be announcing how we're going to do that and what our plans are on LinkedIn.
I love it. I appreciate it. Well, as always, I appreciate you being on here. It's been fun getting to know you from virtual to meeting in person to having you on the podcast and that evolution in this relationship and the value you shared and seeing it from a different perspective, right? Not just a pure sales call center side or inside sales, but the lead gen side with the operational, you know, the data and the testing, like you said. So I appreciate it, Rob. Thanks for coming on the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at CutterConsultingGroup.com.